The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes for the last week of September 2022. I am here. I am Jeff Hawkins. Also with me, as usual, Chris Novembrino. Breaking news as we go to air: the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Antonio Inoki, has passed away. I will admit right up front that I cannot speak on this subject with any amount of intelligence, for the most part, other than, you know, having seen Inoki wrestle occasionally, and I know of the infamous shoot fight with Muhammad Ali, which has gone down in wrestling lore, wrestler versus boxer, and of course, Inoki decided he wanted to make it a bit of a shoot fight. But a guy who, look, New Japan is synonymous with great professional wrestling from that country. And, you know, a lot of my fandom of New Japan came in the early to mid 90s when it was quote unquote at its hottest. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it is a legacy of quality wrestling for wrestling fans, even up until now with the Forbidden Door. Chris, I'm gonna hang back here and let you give any thoughts that you might have here.
Yeah, absolutely. So two thoughts about Inoki. One is that for me, as weird as this might sound, I first realized his importance in the Japanese professional wrestling historical timeline when I got a copy of Virtual Pro Wrestling 2. And he and Jumbo Tsuruta are some of like the last people that you unlock on the game. And Inoki, he's like this really important guy. And then like, obviously I that was a prompt for me to start like looking into who Antonio Inoki is. And there were a couple of key moments there. Like, I feel like everyone at some point sees Antonio Inoki getting the great Antonio in line. That is, of course, a notable moment of
slap. Is that what that was?
Yeah. When he straightens out Mr. Great Antonio. And then, okay, so like that was more of a guy wouldn't work and Antonio gets him in line. The one that really stands out to me in terms of like, I guess he's, in a weird way, like I wouldn't say it's his greatest accomplishment, but for me personally, it is his greatest accomplishment because I'm like a number one Vader fan all time, right? Is that Antonio Inoki really made Vader by doing the shock squash match of a legend. And
I remember.
I mean, like, this is a very important match because like Inoki was so protected. He was like this like Hogan type figure in Japan. And Inoki loses in a not particularly competitive match to Big Van Vader at this point. And it is to the shock of that crowd, to the absolute shock of this crowd, that like a gaijin could come in and just like wreck their guy. And I've always thought of that as like, what a wonderful, I mean, yeah, like Vader's like my favorite wrestler, but like also like it's such an important part of the business. Like, it's not just what you do, it's what you like leave, like your legacy, like making people on the backside of your careers as important as accolades on the front side of your career?
Well, it's interesting because right now we're going through the Muda's farewell tour, and he has been accused in NOAH of, you know, for some reason he beat the biggest young and up and coming star. I don't remember his name, so don't get on me, Japanese wrestling fans. I'm sorry. I don't follow NOAH, but I remember reading about this, and I can remember his name. I just can't say it right now because I can't.
Was it Kenta Kiyomiya?
Kiyomura, I think.
Kiyomura, yeah.
There you go. Thank you. And not laying down for him in it, what was going to be, I think, their last match, or at least one of their last matches, and you're just like, dude, what you do is you establish that legacy, you go away and you be a legend for a while, and you come back once, maybe twice, and you lose to the young kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the easiest stories on earth, and it means so much. And it's one of those weird things with just the sheer amount of wrestling that there is, that legends coming back don't matter anymore. Legends being in a match doesn't really matter anymore. And now everybody wants to see the legend win because they're so happy to see them. And so that doesn't matter anymore either. And it's just, it's one of those weird evolution type.
I'll go one step further. And like the smart part of the audience is just, I mean, like, one, there's a larger smart part of the audience now, right?
Yes.
Two, the smart part of the audience doesn't really think a whole lot about, like, who are you making on the way out? Like, it's just not a big demand for them right now.
It becomes about how much money can you get on the way out, and what's, you know, that kind of thing as well. Because, hey, I may not wrestle ever again.
Right. And look, I mean, far be it for us to ever begrudge the capitalism component of,
no,
like, make your money, bro. Make your money. Get like paid. You're putting your body on the line. Get paid.
Every morning, my first tweet is, "Good morning, get paid."
Right, I but mean, like, yes. It's not the only thing in life either, right? Like, and it's certainly not only thing in, like, wrestling. No, it's not. Hawkins. I believe it or not,
I got nothing else.
No, I many of us don't. Lord knows we're all hanging out by a
career
thread.
Family, none of that, just give me money.
Money. I don't even have a career, I just need money at this point.
I
do think, like, look, as reviewers of wrestling, I think it is important for the reviewer class of people to still think about, who are you making on the way out? So it's like, as we're looking at, like, this most recent Muda run here, what's Muda making? You know, obviously we're not going to grade him on the work rate, right? Like, but so, like, and it's same with, like, Flair. Like, what's Flair? Not that, like, we care a lot about Flair's, like, final run or whatever, but, like, Flair ain't making shit other than money.
Right. Yeah. It's just the attitudes towards legends have changed so much where we're almost afraid of ticking off the audience by having a legend lose to the young guy, because everybody's paid their money to get that last feel good moment, and it's like, well,
dude, the feel good moments when they come through the curtain, yes, and you see the guy, yes, still alive, yes, and can do the thing,
yes,
and the feel good moment is when he hits that finisher the last one more time
and gets kicked out of it.
Yes, and yes, the young guy kicks out, but, like, that's okay.
Yes,
that's okay. That's
part
okay
of the drama. It's part of the magic.
Part of it. Yeah. Right. The old gunslinger must go into the sunset for the new gunslinger that you love.
Yes, yes. I totally agree. There will be other people who can speak on this more intelligently. Dave Meltzer, probably Joe and Rich in some ways. So
they'll have more time to think on this than,
yes,
we have. Like,
we literally heard this 5 minutes ago, so yeah, as we went to air. Other news, Vice TV currently working on a Vince McMahon documentary. According to a report from PW Insider, it will air sometime in October. I have no information on what the subject matter is, but both Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez have recorded some comments of some sort. I assume if it's Vice, it's probably going to be about what a creepy dude he is with women in terms of how he ran his business. It's not going to be anything having to do with the wrestling side, I would assume, but you know, I don't know anything.
Yeah, I would love an exhaustive look at the last 3.5 years of Vince McMahon's regnum. I mean, boy, great television to really dive deep into. A lot of depth.
Vince, what are your thoughts on the plane ride from hell? You know, that kind of stuff. No, it's probably gonna be on the scandal surrounding him leaving WWE. I would probably.
Yeah, no, I would say, I mean, look, it's a massive story, and you know, we're still getting the fallout from it, but look, it's a generational story. It's important.
Regarding the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, Dave Meltzer reporting that they haven't heard anything from the company, at least as of a few days ago, as the ongoing investigation continues.
What are they still gathering data on, Hawkins? I'm asking that semi-rhetorically, but I'm legitimately interested. What could possibly take this investigation so long?
I am under the impression that the investigation itself is probably wrapped up, but right now we're getting into is there going to be litigation amongst any of the parties?
And separation and the method. I think that if the investigation had played out in a way where the more innocent narrative that was advanced about the Bucks and Omega actually held water, I think that this would be basically wrapped at this point-ish.
And I
tend to think that, like, the fact that we're still doing this means that, and like there's other things that seem to suggest this, like where the location of the bite mark is and all that other stuff on Omega's arm and stuff. It seems to me that maybe their story didn't hold all the water that they thought it would.
I will give you a counterpoint in that they can't bring them back no matter if it did hold water because of their positions within the company and because of in case, let's say Punk gets fired because of this and he decides to sue for breach of contract or something like that. The company itself cannot show favoritism towards the other side just yet by bringing them back because he could then use that as part of the lawsuit in some ways. So for right now, everybody's getting a little bit of a cooling off period, and I'm quite all right with that. I'm hoping everybody just kind of comes to their senses and decides to make money off of this after that, but that's me. Next week, we get an extra 15 minutes of Dynamite per Tony Khan. Oh, also, by the way, next week after Rampage, Battle of the Belts is also live. I was not aware that there was a Battle of the Belts. I have not seen anything on television about Battle of the Belts, Chris, and this is supposed to be a quote-unquote premium for television type event.
Wow, this is like literally the first I've heard about the Battle of the Belts thing. I mean, again, I get my information from what I see on the TV shows that I don't fast forward through or like am like stepping away from to, you know, get a drink. So yeah, I didn't catch this Battle of the Belts thing. If it was announced on the show, it must have been once in passing.
No, it was not. I don't believe it has been announced on television yet. And I'm just like, why are we not? We will get into this on the Lazy River because I am having some issues with AEW and their builds. I
am too. The company's just been on kind of narrative autopilot for like, it seems like a 6 weeks now.
And I have a metaphor that if I decide to go for it, you may have to pull me back on it because it might not be suitable for radio or for podcasting. I'm old. I call it radio still. Ticket news. Royal Rumble tickets went on sale today. Today's Friday. God, it's been a long week. With VIP tickets going on sale Wednesday in San Antonio. It looks like they're going to try and sell 40,000 for the Alamo Dome, I believe, is where it's going to be in San Antonio. But there's this little clip in the Observer I want to counteract that with, which is very interesting in some ways. And our friend Garrett Gonzalez brought it up for Fight Game Media, is that they haven't sold out. AEW has not yet sold out full gear. And I've only sold 2,200 for next week's anniversary show.
Whoa.
And even worse, November 4th in Atlantic City, New Jersey right now, ticket sales stand at 776, which is brutal, especially since they did 5,500 paid and 5,900 in the building in February in the same arena. Now, I'm not going to get overwrought here, Chris.
No,
I'm not in trouble.
No, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, CM Punk would solve all these problems.
Right,
but like,
exactly.
But boy,
are they not great. Are they hitting arenas too often with shows that, quote unquote, don't matter? I'm not going to say a Dynamite doesn't matter, but I'm just going to say law of diminishing returns type of thing.
Especially if you lay a flat one in that room the last time.
I don't have the card for it, but it's
no. I don't have the card for that. But you're asking like, are we talking like law of diminishing returns or whatever? One that I definitely do kind of believe in is if like you run a town and you kind of lay a stinker of the show in, even a year later or whatever, the product can be different, but people still have this bad taste in their mouth from the last time they bought a ticket and they bought a stinker.
Well, I think they're trying to cultivate certain cities too. And the problem with that is if you go too often for television, it's going to feel like the next television doesn't matter.
Also true.
You know what I'm saying is it's kind of like, you know, it's like doing a house show loop, but you're doing it for it's the house show loop thinking, but for television. And I don't think that works for television. I think you can wear out audiences for television. A lot of people complain about how often they go back to Chicago. I'm inclined to agree with them in some ways. Like, I'm going to be very interested to see how this Thanksgiving Eve show in Chicago does, because they want to make that a yearly tradition, kind of like Greensboro was for Crockett for Thanksgiving night type of thing. So, I mean, there is something to being there's the one thinking you're being friendly to your fans and giving to your fans. And look, we're going to keep coming back to this town because we just love you guys so much. But there's also the whole thing of, hey, you know what? It really is a special occasion when AEW rolls into Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, or wherever you want to go. You know, that kind of thing, which WWE does. I mean, for television, it's always a rare treat in certain cities. They'll do the occasional house show here and there in like small towns, but you know, they like the big cities type of a thing. So I know that there's the discourse right now that one company has more momentum than the other. I don't necessarily buy into that necessarily, because you know, it's one of those things where this thing ebbs and flows. So I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, so to speak, but
I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, I suppose, but like when we say that one company has more momentum than the other, are we saying that WWE has more momentum than AEW?
I think so.
I mean, if that's the kind of conventional wisdom, I tend to agree with that right now.
But
I think a lot of that is in context of AEW is going through a bit of an identity crisis right now.
Well, I also think it's kind of market share for me, because it's one of those things where, look, WWE is always going to have that shelf space until AEW can take them over. And I might be also just over setting the bar too high for what AEW can do, given it's still a very young company. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. When does AEW start being an older company by your definition?
You know, when they...
They're like 3.5 years, right?
When they reach puberty, 13.
Oh, 13?
No, I don't know.
I mean, I just, in my head, like 5 or 6 years at this point, you're not a young company anymore.
Okay,
so
that's fair too.
Time ticks is what I'm saying.
Ratings talk, I'm just going to read all this off. I don't have a lot of huge thoughts to say, but Raw, 10th for the week on cable, Dynamite, 17th. 1,674,000 viewers on average for Raw. 0.45 in the demo. 990,000. For AEW Dynamite, 0.34 in the demo. If you want to give that discourse, they fell by a couple hundred thousand viewers. I don't know, Chris. I'll let you go into that. But
yeah, I don't have a take on that.
SmackDown
yeah.
on Fox, 2,535,000, 0.63 in the demo. Largest viewing audience in nearly 2 years.
Look, that one, I feel like, it's weird. Like, I don't have like a strong impulse towards invert or negative correlation with bad shows and bad ratings, but I do tend to have like a bit of a positive correlation with like, if the show is stronger, more people are going to watch it, it seems like.
And
I think SmackDown has been stronger over recent weeks.
And I think also I'm not a huge fan of it per se, because I think if you're going to say, hey, we have separate rosters, you need to kind of keep them separate so that when they fight each other it's special. There's been a lot of crossover in between, both with Damage Control and the entire Bloodline story, and I guess Gargano and Owens are at SmackDown tonight, I haven't been keeping up with what's been going on there, but I have a friend who's there at SmackDown tonight. So I guess the cross-pollination might also be working, also kind of working for it. We'll get into this in the Lazy River, I think, but that whole White Rabbit stuff, I think it's, you know, I don't know how much it's working, but it's at least gotten some buzz going.
I would be very interested to see, like, advanced analysis that talks about, like, how much these links are being clicked on. And yes. Like, but I think it's great, especially for, like, people who really are into this. It gives them something to dive into and sink their teeth into.
Yeah. And more to do. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's more to do. It's a second screen experience that I feel like is rewarding for the people who want to go down that
path. It's interactive. It's basically the company interacting with fans as well in some way, as opposed to, hey, just sit here and we'll serve you gruel or whatever. But personnel moves. Roosh officially All Elite, signing a contract with them. Bandido, who we saw on Dynamite, has been offered a full-time job in AEW as well. And returning, as we saw on Raw this week, Candice LeRae in WWE on the main roster, which I never thought would happen after she would be kept down in NXT for that long. I thought she had passed her time. I thought she was perfect maybe about 15 years ago or so, but any thoughts on those three that we can also bring up?
I think Candice is a nice addition to the Raw roster. Yes. And I'm glad to see her get that call.
Yeah. Did not realize she was 37. Good for her. I'm, you know, because in the past, WWE would look at that number and go, pass. Not enough time. But look, she is a great talent. She's a great presence on wrestling television. I like her a lot. Roosh getting a big deal in AEW is interesting to me. I overall like his work. But it's also one of those things where it's like he's gonna pick his spots.
Yeah, there's good Roosh and bad Roosh.
There's good Roosh and bad Roosh a lot. I will also be interested to see what Bandido is going to do, because Bandido, you know, formerly part of the Ring of Honor roster, was a fairly hot commodity out there on in terms of free agent signing speculation, and then kind of cooled off. So we will see about that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Bandido when we get to the Lazy River, which we will do now because we have no sponsor this week. So the Lazy River of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever comes to mind, classic, modern, future even, wrestling, we'll talk about here because there's so much wrestling to watch within the week. Not any one person can watch it all, although it feels like sometimes Chris and I try. So Chris, I will hand it off to you for our first random topic here.
Sure. The Jericho Appreciation Society is what I call the Dudline. It's like a boring version of the Bloodline comprised of people who could never actually carry.
Oh, that is so fantastic.
It's just more boring every week. You can put stupid suits on everybody. You can bring out pizza. You can bring out Luigi Primo. But this thing has been spiraling around the same drain for weeks now.
That's the sad part of it, because I like the individual parts of this. Even the ones that aren't, you know, the most over people in the world. Like, I have a weird fascination watching Anna Jay try and act, which is kind of weird. I like Jake Hager. I know a lot of people don't. I love 2.0 because they're always game for whatever. I like Daniel Garcia, and I like Guevara and Ty and that stupid making out thing. I think it's funny. I kind of like Jericho, but yeah, this feels like it's just hitting the bit as opposed to doing any real character development here.
Yes. It's like, they came up with this, oh, we're sports entertainers, as like a thesis, but like, dude, you've got to come up with new material from week to week.
Yeah, we're just going to do things that the WWE would do with people in terms of presentation, and then that's all we're going to do.
And here's the thing, like, the pizza party wasn't even really done like in an ironic meta in WWE, they always do pizza parties sort of things.
Or even as a Memphis, the heels are all celebrating right now. It's a good old fashioned heel celebration, where they're eating cake and it's not going to get crashed or whatever, but you know, it's just the heels come out and Lance Russell's there and, you know, the first family's out there and they're eating cake and they have party favors and they're actually having a good time celebrating their evilness in terms of this big victory or whatever they've done over Lawler or whoever. You know, instead, this is basic first 20 minutes of Raw BS. We're going to come out and everybody's going to get a turn at the mic. And, you know, we're going to have this dopey pizza guy next to us.
It's a funny hat on top of a funny hat.
It's the funny hat on top of Marina Shafir. That's what it is, really. It's just, I'm going to cut this promo, but I'm wearing this hat. Turn Ferguson on.
It gave way to this unbelievably long, or not that long, but like I guess nearly 10 minutes felt like a long time for Bryan Danielson versus Matt Menard.
Yeah, and that could have been built a little bit too.
Yes,
as opposed to he just comes out. And, oh, I'm going to just challenge a random guy in your stable. It's like, okay, let's have a little story here.
No, especially with the kind of like power scaling disparity between Danielson and pretty much that entire stable outside of Hager, who I think he's already beaten. You need to actually put like some story into that because like no one thinks that Matt Menard's going to beat Bryan Danielson. So like, you know, then it begs the question, what are we watching this next 10 minutes for?
Yeah, I could also see just as a callback to last week, there's a lot of the same criticism that Lanza has for the Bloodline story and it not going anywhere for almost a year and a half. I think you're on to something there. I'll tell you what I did like about that thing. I just like the little subtle move of Jericho buying a hat for Daniel Garcia and it being the wrong kind of hat, as if he doesn't really pay attention to Daniel Garcia. He's just a means to an end there.
Right. Yeah. I know. It's like, cause like Garcia does have a type of hat. I forget what they're called, but like that,
Kendall.
Yeah. He has a type of hat that he does like. And so they got him a bucket hat.
I'm going to ask this question cause this is more in terms of, booking future and stuff like that. And I just, this has to go one of two ways, right? Either this tag match next week is Sting and Flair versus Anderson and Pillman, where Danielson's a putz and the three of them give him a beat down. Or, and this might be somewhat interesting to me, Jericho, in terms of his I'm going to go after every champion in Ring of Honor's history type of thing, eventually it looks up and sees that Daniel Garcia is the ROH pure champion and decides he has to take him out too.
Yeah, no, it's weird because I feel like this is petering towards Daniel Garcia being sick of Jericho as ROH champion and wanting to take Jericho out. But I could just as easily see this being ambush of Danielson to set up Garcia versus Danielson.
And if it is, it's a problem because now they've done this with two other people in there, in Jamie Hayter and Wardlow, where the people turn.
This gets back to my point last week of fighting yesterday's war. They can't seem to help themselves with the backpedaling sort of thing. We didn't quite stick the landing last time, so therefore we should circle back and do the same spot again.
Yeah, if this is all a swerve, which I felt like it might have been after hearing Garcia's promo type of thing, I'm just like, my God, the people are going to turn on this. And I don't think Garcia is ever going to be hotter than he is right now in terms of being able to turn him into a babyface type of champ. So yeah, I think you're right. I think they're fighting. If they do that, it's all a setup and that Danielson is Sting here and he's a geek and whatever. I think it's going to fall flat and they're just going to basically have to go to square one and go, okay, how can we get that same energy for Garcia back eventually? And they're going to find that it's not there. All right, time to talk about the elephant in the room, the big thing in all wrestling criticism this week. This Saraya promo was terrible. Can we say it in company? It was a terrible promo. It sent so many mixed messages about what the point of Saraya is in AEW, to the point where I think that also contributed to it undermining its purpose. And even its purpose, I think, wasn't very good, because this felt like something drawn up in a marketing boardroom, where it's like, all right, we're going to use her because she may not be ready yet to get back in the ring, but we're going to use her to elevate the entire division. So what she's going to do, instead of coming out there and really making her a strong character, talking about why she's there and what she wants to do, which we'll get into a little bit later, because I think people are really kind of overvaluing that part of the promo. She decides to bring out the entire women's division out there to stand while she tries to put them over, and it doesn't work. And she's like, bring out the women's division.
She didn't even get through more than like one person.
Yes.
I mean, like, the worst part about this is that it was this like cursory level thing. And she was putting over interim champion Toni Storm as the greatest champion in the company. And if you can't, based off of my summary of that sentence, realize the problem with the tone there, I can't help you. I'm sorry, you're out of touch.
It was very TNA thinking.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And there's a certain disconnect there when you do these types of promos, where it's just like they're all standing there and hey, these people can't speak for themselves, but they're all really good and you people should like them. That just will not get them over at any point. And when you say I'm bringing out the women's division and the heels all stay back, and then out comes Britt and her crew, and Britt is in full Charlotte mode here, just cutting off Saraya at the knees in terms of talking about her neck and how she can't go anymore. And, you know, the veiled shot at Thunder Rosa. And I was like, this is not helping anyone in the division. And in fact, it's just making everybody think, yes, this is why the women don't get more opportunities. Now, as we continue in this, because I don't think anything in terms of the content needs to be really said here, because much like MJF and Yuta last week, Saraya's just out of the game, destroyed by Britt, other than the your rhyme names with the S word, which people started chanting, but then they had to pot down because they don't want the adult language on the TV anymore. So Saraya comes out and it's a revolution. The revolution, the revolution, the revolution, which is completely WWE branding. About it's the we're here to take over. We're here to cause chaos.
We're here to cause chaos. Yes, yeah.
It was.
I'm here as the manager of the division to cause chaos.
Of the Kabuki Warriors. I'm here to do that.
Wow, yeah, that's right. She was the manager of the Kabuki Warriors for a cup of coffee.
Yes. Well, you bring up a very good point as well that brings into a lot of my criticism about this promo. Is she the commissioner? Because we have never found out what her role is here. But it felt like that, because she goes out there, she goes, we're going to have a lumberjack match. And then she leaves and does commentary instead of being one of the lumberjacks. So it appears to me she's some sort of pseudo authority figure, but we haven't established that on television. We haven't said that on television. I was under the assumption that she was going to come in and be a wrestler of some point. It would be nice to know these types of things, Chris.
I agree. Look, the Saraya promo was very bad, and kind of like a mirror of the Wheeler Yuta promo from last week.
Yes,
which I did not think experienced great improvement week over to week here. When she comes out and she calls Britt Baker, Shit Baker, or Clit Baker, you know, they censored on some broadcast, so you might not be able to figure out what she was calling, or just something rhymes with Britt, you see. Could be Brick Baker for all you know. But once she comes out there and then Britt Baker says, is it Saraya or Saraya? Half the audience doesn't know. Like that's kind of true though. Like I think like,
well, she came out with a tweet and you're correct. No, they don't know that, but I think didn't,
oh no, she's corrected it. And she's tried to like set the record straight.
Excalibur has also said that. This no, is how you pronounce it. Too.
I get that.
Yes.
But like the observation here is you're not even well established enough right now where we know the right way to say your name.
Correct.
And that's not a knock on the audience or like insensitivity or whatever. That's literally a knock earnestly on your level of visibility right now.
Well, let's talk about the women's.
She's right.
Yeah. And let's talk about the women's formula here, because it's followed a similar formula for at least a year and a half, maybe 2 years now. Is new star comes in, cuts snarky promo at Brit. Brit just kills them on the mic. We did this with Ruby Riott. We did this with Athena. We did this with Toni Storm. We did this with,
you know, Toni Storm was part of the segment, believe it or not.
Yeah. We did this with Thunder Rosa, if you remember correctly. We did this with, another babyface who debuted and just got, oh, we did it with, basically what we do is we throw every babyface woman at Britt Baker, and Britt Baker just demeans them in character, as opposed to
as a heel, to a at best generously a mixed reaction, but usually a positive one.
There's a little fourth wall breaking in it that really undermines the entire process of it, and that's my problem with Britt. It sometimes I think she's uber talented on the mic in terms of personality and things like that. I get that, but I think
Britt does a really good job of taking care of Britt on the microphone. I don't necessarily know that extends anywhere else.
I you know, take care of yourself, I guess. You're the product, but at the same time, this division is, unless someone gets one, this is how I put it on the Dynamite show that I do on Wednesdays. I said, Britt is the kid that you played with in the neighborhood who would be getting so upset at losing, they'd change the rules in the middle of the game so they wouldn't have to lose. That, to me, is what a promo battle with Britt Baker is like.
And then the last, and for me, one of the cringiest elements of the Saraya promo here was...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Or Saraya promo here was the constant putting over of Tony Khan, the visionary.
Yes.
Oh, it's so nice to have a good boss, because Tony is a good boss. Tony is very good. And now I'm going to go on to the commentary booth and say, Tony is doing a good job. Good job, Tony. Tony is good. Like, good Lord, man. Get over yourself. Stop being so insecure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a certain portion of the fandom that wants that.
I get there's yes, I'm aware of East Tony Stan over there, and Western Tony Stan. Like,
Daddy gonna give us good wrestling instead of evil Vince guy. Yeah,
Tony Khan is Stan. Yeah, no, that's fine and all, but like, it makes her seem like a weenie to or an ass kiss to constantly be talking about how wonderful the boss is. It's nerd stuff.
Your turn.
Okay. I guess, I mean, we can sort of continue on with this AEW show here. I thought this was by and in large a dud show. Like the Juice Robinson match. Goodness gracious, Hawkins. This went on way too long. Like for a world title eliminator match, not even a world title match. And I'm not saying Juice Robinson should have gotten a title shot. But like, come on, dude. It's an eliminator match. Either he pulls off some sort of schmishmaws on Moxley to get a second title shot within 10 minutes, or he doesn't. But like, let's keep these eliminator matches under 10 minutes, please.
I I agree with you. I understand that they want to keep the New Japan relationship strong, even though they kept saying he's a free agent. My problem with this, and I know that Mox wants to give. Good Lord, Mox gives so much to every guy he's in the ring with, and it's a positive.
There's a time to negative. Give. There's yes. a time to give. And, yes. and a world title eliminator match. Yes. This is not the right time to go long.
But my issue, especially with the Juice match, and especially with this program, including the Bandido match, is all of these programs should be 3 to 5 week feuds if we're going to do this. Let's have some, I mean, the Juice promo before the match was very, very good. Don't get me wrong, but that's something you want to play the week before he comes in and does a squash match to introduce himself, or even a week before the match, not 5 minutes before he's coming to the ring to build the feud. The anticipation is something that is necessary in wrestling. Bandido, my God, that dude comes off the screen and he is fantastic. And if he give him a white duster, but please let's get some creativity here. Let's do a simple 3 week feud of he's the bounty hunter coming in to take the ROH title back home or whatever.
And he's been terrorizing the Jericho Appreciation Society about a month now.
Wanted posters of the Jericho Appreciation Society. And if we're not going to show him on camera doing things to them, then how about we just have some vignettes of Bandido and introducing him and starting to educate the crowd a little more, even if they know him. Now, the talking point I heard that drove me nuts was, well, Bandido was in the main event of All In, so the fans of AEW know exactly who he is. Chris, do you remember what the last match on All In was?
No.
It was no. Kota Ibushi and the Jacksons versus Bandido, Rey Fénix, and Rey Mysterio.
Who could forget that?
Exactly. And this was 3 years ago. Guys, Bandido has not been on AEW television since, I don't believe. Ring of Honor, stop over it. This is going to go even further into the hole I'm digging, but I saw people complaining about this Philadelphia crowd. You're complaining about a wrestling crowd in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Man, yeah.
There is a problem with your product.
And that was not one isolated comment. That I saw that across multiple mediums. There is a weird conventional wisdom held by AEW faithful that the show does not fail the crowd, that the crowd fails the show. And it's just baffling to me as a reviewer.
Could it possibly be that your two big title matches, number one, your main event title match was not even the company's title necessarily?
Right. And you could sit there and tell me, oh, well, Tony Khan's doing a really smart thing about investing in the future intrigue in ROA.
Philly is the home of Ring of Honor, blah, blah, blah.
The year is 2022. No one cares about All Right. Stop. And let's not bury the fact that the Bandido and Jericho match was very well worked.
Oh, yeah.
Extraordinarily well worked. I mean, it exceeded expectations. I know, like, Cornette on his show week prior was like, well, Jericho will never be able to turn an ROH quality match. Wrong, Jim. Clearly did. But it still doesn't get you away from the fact that, like, you're not really hooked into this Bandido story.
No,
because there's no story to be hooked into.
There's no story there. Yeah, exactly. And he's an afterthought as Jericho cuts his promo afterwards. I love the visual of the blood seeping through his mask. I know it's terrible that he got stiffed on something, but it was such an awesome looking. I mean, it made him look like a badass.
Oh, my God. Okay, so speaking of blood, one last thing. Juice Robinson drinking Moxley's blood in the year of our Lord 2022. Stop. No. I don't need to see that. That's not cool. It doesn't make you look awesome. It's like, cool, hepatitis boy. Enjoy that.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Oh yeah. Oh, your other main event match was of course Juice Robinson from New Japan against your world champion, who is their two biggest stars were the first two segments of the show, and I get ratings. But for a wrestling show, you want to end strong.
These last few weeks have really felt kind of like limp to the finish shortest shows rather than sprint to the finish shortest shows.
Mox just won the world title last week, and you open with the Jericho Appreciation Society and Danielson. What does that say about your world champion being the most important thing on this show? I know everybody, wrestling fans are more sophisticated, blah, 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 blah. No, man, the basic crap works. Okay.
Right. and it's like they went to Mox the week after the pay-per-view debacle as the open guy. But like, dude, you know, you got to commit to this guy as your world champion. Otherwise, he's just the guy who had been waiting days to see, you know, defend the belt this week. Like, ooh, what intrigue. It's got to be more than that. He has to be a central narrative focus of the show. Also, if you're gonna get the belt off him and hand it off to MJF, as many of us suspect, you gotta make it tragic when the guy loses the belt.
Yes. Wins and losses have to matter, and people have to be mad about that, and there has to be a narrative shift.
I thought this was a company where wins and losses matter too.
Yeah. I only have one other AEW note on my rundown, so I'll give it real quick. And it's a bit of praise, but it's a bit of watch this differently now, because a lot of people were really praising Yuta's promo. And I agree in some aspect. The vocal delivery itself was very good.
He cracked. He had a vocal crack.
I don't mind the vocal crack because it means you're passionate in some way.
I know, but it was like I was teenage boy vocal cracky.
No, but my voice cracks on this show a lot, so I forgive it. So maybe that's just minor to me. But I want to point out something for the people that are really, really saying, "Oh man, that was such awesome!" Blah 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 blah. Watch his body language, because and this is where my wheelhouse comes in terms of acting and performing, and not being the most confident performer in the world when I was starting out as well, and even sometimes now. Yuta gets in there and he has the fire in his voice. Don't get me wrong. It's great. But he's looking down, because I'm thinking he's trying to remember his lines or whatever. And then when he's not looking down, he's kind of looking all over the place in the audience, but not really making eye contact to talk to any of them. And that's a move that people who do live performance in the round and things do all the time and stuff like that. But it doesn't when they're not confident in themselves. But the moment he looked at the hard camera, it all came together. And my note for him would have been, do the entire promo into that hard camera, looking at us, staring a dagger into that camera, because you're communicating with hundreds of thousands more people than are in that arena. The live crowd's there for ambiance, don't get me wrong, but you're talking to us watching on TV. It is still a television product. And if you want to make it come off better, stop this. I need to connect with the crowd in some way. You connect with the crowd in your matches. You connect with us at home in your promos. And I was like, look at him. He's sounding fiery, but he's looking down at the ground. And so I'm just looking at him going, he has no faith right now. He's trying to remember words, or he's nervous or something like that, and that might be the
this man needs help and guidance on this front. Like I'm with you. I think you kind of nailed the thing that's really missing here, is that like for 2 weeks now Yuta has come out and tried to work the crowd to work the TV, and he needs to work the TV to work the crowd.
Yes.
I don't know that he can do that, but that's definitely a big process step that has been missing.
Your turn, sir.
Okay. I guess we can move out of the land of AEW and into I don't know. Let's do NXT. Why not?
You wanna do some NXT? We can do some NXT.
Yeah, we can do some NXT. There's not a lot of NXT to do here.
And we'll end with Raw, because I do have a couple things on Raw I want to mention.
I kind of really enjoyed the A Day in the Life of Pretty Deadly segment.
Oh, that was fantastic.
I know it's like not like a heavy thought or anything like that, but like,
classic word.
No, but it's like classic, like vintage heel characterization.
It's
I'm very here for it.
Classic 80s cheese. All it needed, really, instead of being A Day in the Life of necessarily, was for it to be a stupid music video type of thing. With no dialogue whatsoever. They're just doing all these same dumb things, but set to a popular song.
And maybe some isolated quotes or whatever that, yes, like make them sound like Airheads.
Yes, but man, I am here for more of that kind of stuff. I think that just helps build them in terms of things. But the entire opening the robe to the belt, that's pure cheese. I mean, that's the workout videos of the early 90s, late 80s. I mean, they do this every week with somebody who wasn't on TV. If you're watching like regional television,
and they're like in love with themselves, yes. And like
it's the Terry Taylor, Tully Blanchard type of thing.
Yes,
where it's like we're showing that they're really high society heel type things, the fabulous ones in some way, where they're doing the bubble bath. There's little shades of that in here. I adored this.
Yes, no. I mean, like, look, their name is pretty deadly. They're supposed to be the pampered posh boy champions, and like, I was just tickled that they did this. I thought this is a great segment. I mean, it's nothing fancy or anything, but I just thought it totally worked for who these guys are.
Let me counterpoint NXT with the one thing I had on here that I wanted to talk about, and that's Sol Ruka's debut.
Okay,
I like her. I thought she over-delivered in some ways, being at her first TV match. She has a certain presence. She's a very good athlete. She does the gymnastics very, very well. I just don't know if that's... This modern female style where they just want them doing cartwheels and flips and somersaults and tumbling... I'm a punch kick guy. I'm just like
it's so weird to me to have someone like her and not have her throwing drop kicks, because those to me would be so impressive looking coming from someone built like her.
Yes. And is Amari Miller someone we want to invest in? Because there's a nice little point where she waves pre-match to Amari Miller, but I thought Amari Miller was also one of these younger people. I thought, and this was, I mean, you could see the ref basically guiding them through this match. And here's this set piece. Let WWE/NXT, I mean, you have Santana Garrett as a coach there. Use her. You have Amber Nova working one of the schools in the area who does enhancement work for both companies. Bring her in. I'm not saying either's a great ring general per se, but they have a hell of a lot more experience than any of those two in the ring.
For debut matches, you need to have
a class match. Yes, this was a class match to do in front of your classmates. And I was a little confused because she's a surfer. I mean, we're now getting back to
her vignettes suck. They suck. They're very bad.
Like, hey,
they're a series of non sequiturs. Like,
they tell you nothing.
As the tide comes in, it's time to go to shore. What the hell does that mean, Hawkins? Like, I'm scared of the big waves. That like I don't know. I spent some time on the beach, so like to me, if you're scared of high tide, what that tells me is that you are a timid surfer. Most surfers actually live for high tide, Hawkins. Yes.
Come on. Has anybody here seen Point Break, for God's sake?
The vignettes are written by someone who's clearly never surfed a day in their life.
Yes, it's oh, you seem like it's, what would surfers say? Let me Wikipedia this article. Oh, they love the Zen-ism of surfing. That's
right. No, it would be like if like you had like new like Guitar Girl or something, and she'd be like, I like to rock my guitar. There is nothing quite like jamming. It really puts the wind in my hair. I love to rock. And you're like, okay, this girl doesn't even know like how to hold it.
Let's shred. Yeah. and also no,
turn it up to 10.
This one goes to 11. No surf related offense for Sol Ruka either, if I remember correctly. Like, why are you not doing like a surfboard this is your gimmick, this is your entire hook.
Some sort of exhibition of like how you use tranquility to your advantage, like, yes. That anything. There's just like, it was a very flavorless debut among everything else.
And that's a perfect adjective for it, is flavorless. It's, look, we have this athletic woman who can do a lot of tumbling drills with this other woman. and they're going to do a little dance for you, and we're going to call it a wrestling match. And this should have been a student show in front of just the students. That's what this was. So yeah, I did not care for that. Your turn, and I have nothing else for NXT. So
man, I guess I will say to just wrap it up. The main event here, the Gallus versus the two guys. That boy, the finish of that was just like they flipped it from Gallus just like whooping up on these guys. They real quickly hit the glasses over Gallus's head, and then that's the end of the match. It was not an intriguing or engaging match. It was not good so much as it was long.
It was very long, and I understand at the end trying to get Gallus over as badasses, but they just got beat, right?
And a clownish way too. Like, you can't have Mark Coffey it like upside down in a trash can and stand him back, stealth back up, and like spaghetti legs himself, and then try to make him look like a badass afterwards.
And then send a SWAT team after them.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You're SWAT. You're swatting spaghetti legs.
Yeah.
Come on now.
It's like, really? Think you brought enough guys? You know, that kind of thing. You're just watching on. This is an overreaction to try and make up for the fact that they just made them look weak I want to call him Buchanan, but that's his dad, Bull Buchanan. I forgot their names.
Briggs and Jensen.
Thank you. Now I'm gonna go to Raw. And this was something I mentioned last week after we went off air that we forgot to talk about. I don't know if it worked as well this week, but overall, this Dexter Lumis thing is getting over with this crowd.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. And I actually think the Miz squadron getting annihilated. I mean, like that. Look, that's good. That's a good Miz segment to me.
And I think it kind of goes to, I know the priorities between the two companies, and it's very weird because they both have their weaknesses. Like WWE is almost all foreplay, and they never really get to good action thereafter.
No, for sure.
You'll occasionally get a banger with like Imperium or something like that, but they never really heat up the feud. They never, you know, it's like, and if it's foreplay, it's nothing but like kissing. There's no heavy petting. It never escalates to anything, really. It's just you do a little heavy petting for a while, and then you leave and you go to another person. You do heavy petting type of a thing. Whereas AEW, to continue this terrible metaphor that I teased earlier, two pump chump.
They
action, and that's it, and it doesn't mean anything, and it's
no foreplay.
Unsatisfying because we haven't built it at all, you know.
Right, not really appreciating that the experience is it's the time you spent, not the destination necessarily.
Yeah, I got there. Cool. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. You forgot that it's a journey, my friend.
You forget that there needs to be like some service to somebody else in here, and you know. That's the worst metaphor I'll ever do, but Dexter Lumis can't wrestle. I'm like, how much does he need to do, really?
The genius of Miz to me as a character is he's a heel who you always want to see bad things happen to. You never want to, like, you never feel bad for him. Like you have to really kind of go beyond the pale, like stalk his house, or, you know, like one of the kind of crazier segs when they try to turn him face.
Yeah.
He's perfectly built for Dexter Lumis's stalker character to add to torment on a week by week basis. And I mean, like, I think, you know, Miz should win this first match and the tormenting should continue because that's where the money is with this. It's just a segment. It's a thing to entertain people, but like it establishes Lumis's character. Miz is a guy who you can torment indefinitely and doesn't hurt him a lick. I have no problems with it. Is it my jam? Is it my shit? No.
Is it the greatest thing on earth? And do I like it as much as Kay Manito or La Parca? No. But it's still one of those things that surprised me because the common logic going in was, well, you know, this crowd's going to turn on Dexter because he can't wrestle. I'm like, dude, do you know WWE crowds? I mean, they don't care. They just want this character goofy skits because they'll remember. I mean, Regal said it on his table for three, and I say it all the time. It's like, people won't remember you for your great matches, but, you know, that cross-dressing moment, that was the proudest moment of my career.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, to his point, like, I mean, I think he's a reels man. He's a reels man was invoked on commentary this week. As a, you know, a reference to Regal's career, it wasn't like, remember that time you put the Regal stretch on Ultimo Dragon in 98?
And I hate WWE because I just want hot feuds and they never build. So don't think I'm being an apologist here, but I'm going to sandwich a negative with the positive here. And it's going to be, this is going to be tough for me, Chris. Because I have to criticize Aunt Pam. I love me some Bailey. You know this.
Mm-hmm.
I love me this damage control stable. This feud with Bianca and the baby faces, it's, we've never really been told why damage control is there. It goes into the, we're taking over.
Yeah, well, they want to damage things and they want to control them.
They allude to being looked over when they were down in NXT. And I think they need to go harder on that. And I think that would be good for fiery promos here, but they never quite get there. See my foreplay analogy earlier. That they allude to it, but it's just in service of getting to, and now we're going to see Bianca and Io fight for 7 minutes and do, you know, a fun match, but a match that really doesn't mean anything.
It just, you know, also seems to me that a group that calls themselves Damage Control really does have sort of a green light to do more damage control during matches in the form, yes, of interference. Like, yes, it's consistent with the, I know people don't like interference in their wrestling because it's a sport and all, right? But like, let's suppose it's a TV show with characters. This faction is like essentially named after like the premise of interference, that you do damage control when like things are getting out of hand, you send in damage control to contain the situation. I feel like even in the matches, like obviously Bailey's the focal point, but like Bailey and Dakota should be always trying to do damage control for Io, and Io and Bailey should be trying to do damage control for Dakota. And Dakota and Io should be trying to do damage control for Bailey once, you know, she finally wins the belt.
And if the premise of this stable is that they were overlooked and that they're here to, quote unquote, they should be angrier. And they are afraid to do angry on WWE television a lot of times because they only do it for the certain baby face who's getting, you know, the Drew McIntyre gets his time to be angry occasionally. And then we really get into the feud.
But it's an easy talk track, right? Like, for too long, we were looked over. It's a new day here in WWE. There's new day, but we're not getting our opportunities. So we're going to make them, and we're going to take them.
Well, yeah, and be bitter and angry and let that fuel you as opposed to coming out here and doing, you know, look, I loved the Ding Dong Hello character. I don't want Bailey in this iteration necessarily being Seth Rollins again. I want her to be kind of, hey, I was off all this time. And if you're going to bring that up, I'm going to get angry about it. Or instead of just trying to, okay. No, be angry. Bring it up. You know, get mad at Bianca for being able to main event WrestleMania while you were gone. You know, those types of things. I mean, that's what builds feuds. And instead, it's just, we're here. I'm driving on a golf cart. And now one of my flunkies is going to fight the main person over there and lose to, you know, set up a I get to do a finisher on her and then talk to her on the mic. I mean, you know, it's the formula, and it also goes to the criticisms of it. But it's just one of those things where it's, again, if you want the TV to be better, you got to kind of make the characters stronger as opposed to thinking of plot points necessarily. Because plot will come.
Right. No, and plot tends to come from good characters. Good, yes, characters tend to naturally lend themselves to easy plots because you, yes, just know how person A would think about a thing, how person B would think about a thing.
Yes.
And you just anticipate natural friction from there.
It's the whole point of doing gimmicks in wrestling is to give people who wouldn't ordinarily have strong characters. So, yeah. I have one more thing, but...
Do it.
Anything else? I am, there's a lot, look, I love Bailey, I love Asuka. I love Dakota. I love Io. I love Bianca. I love the women. The women's division is great. And I think Bayley and her crew being back have made it hotter. But damn, if the men's division hasn't gotten an injection of fun with Gargano and Owens doing the Panda Express gimmick again.
How about good match, good TV match, Rey Mysterio yes. kind of sneaking up here? Like, I get that we make fun of Mysterio Science Theater 3000.
Oh, I skipped over that promo, but
no, the promo, but like Mysterio consistently and like in advanced ages continue to turn into really good TV matches. Like, they're entertaining. Like that Balor match was a lot of fun too.
Balor match was a lot of fun. And look, the Balor AJ story is a lot better than people are giving credit for.
I agree.
I love the whole, look, I'm not going to turn on you just yet. You're my friend. I'm going to keep trying, but know that I can kick your ass at any time. You know, that kind of thing. I think that's fun. You know, they teased it the first time where he didn't punch him or anything. He just goes, okay, just think about it for next week after being rejected. This week, he threatens him with ending his career. I could have done that, but I don't want to because I want you to join us type of a thing. I think Rhea has hit her stride on this, and you talked about this last week. And hey, Sammy and Solo Sikoa. How fantastic was this where Sammy gets a big win through interference, and it's not because one of them is trying to necessarily save the guy, but it's because, hey, I may like the guy kind of a thing. Sammy and this bloodline story continues to, I mean, at least Sammy's involvement in the bloodline and him making a friend with the quote unquote enforcer of the bloodline. It's the buddy cop movie I didn't think I wanted, but I kind of need now.
I did not expect myself to ever get back into the bloodline storyline, but like, damn if they haven't kind of sucked me back in a little bit with this Sami Zayn and Solo Sikoa injection. Like, it's just, it's interesting. I want to see where this story goes. There's no sort of higher compliment I can pay to TV writing than like, okay, let's see what the next chapter is. I'm in on this. I'm in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah, and I think we brought up last week, I would love for this to defy expectations, except to be the straight ahead, all these guys are really just clowning Sammy type of thing. Like, I would love Sammy to be the hero for the bloodline in the War Games.
Yes. I kind of like the, okay. Like I like the idea of like the bloodline and Owens leading into War Games, really tugging for Sammy's heart. I think that's going to actually be fun. I don't know. Like there's, they could mishandle this. We'll see where it goes.
Jay trying to frame Sammy for Neptune and Roman just going, no, man, I like the guy.
Yeah, no. Roman getting mad at Jay for trying to frame. Yeah. Yes. Going like, you idiot, you're going to cost us a War Games match.
Exactly. Don't you see how hard the guys were? I would love nothing more. Here's something
that ultimately who sabotages the bloodline is Jay, not Sammy.
And it possibly turns Roman face in the process. Could that happen on this? Because everybody loves this Sammy and Roman thing. And everybody knows, I mean, look, the obvious thing to do is for Roman to eventually destroy Sammy because everybody loves Sammy. And then,
as a way of sending a message to Owens going into War Games. Yeah.
But if they went the natural way where this crowd wants them to go, Sammy and Roman becoming friends and actually ending up turning Roman in some ways to being a more likable person would be an interesting way to try and get back there. I know it would screw up their plans, but you know, that's fantasy book and stuff. I get it. But at the same time, for right now, until they finally decide.
No, you know, you try to, when we're thinking about this stuff, I think you try to think of like, what's the most intriguing storyline?
Yeah.
And you know, like, what could you fill the most weeks with?
What would
and, like,
I pitch if I were in the room there?
That's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And yeah, to me, the intrigue is like, there is something really interesting about this heel Roman and seemingly in it for completely innocent reasons, Sami Zayn in the bloodline thing. And so like, you either have to have, and I don't know how you could do this convincingly now that Sami Zayn has had a plan all along here. Doesn't seem like that's possible. Especially not after like, what are you doing here in the big confrontation? He like was like, I'm completely innocent. So like his motives are pure. So I just like, I think the whole like, can Sami Zayn melt Roman's heart story is a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. Wrestling's a love story.
It's a lot. Look, it's a soap opera. It's a soap opera, people.
Let me put this this pitch that I had in my head that I think I put this out Monday for general thinking here, because I don't know. Here's the question. Would this make the thing way too wacky or way too awesome? Billy Kay and the Bloodline.
What does she do for them?
That's a good question. I don't know yet.
Yeah, I can't. So to answer your question, I wouldn't know unless you told me what she was doing. Like, as okay, I got you. Billy Kay as Paul Heyman's F up secretary, who is constantly screwing things up for Heyman.
Just trying to be Naomi. That's what I'm
she's always trying to like do the right thing. Like, and like Heyman likes her, but like can't get over the fact that she just does not know how to not screw things up.
She's the Miss Tessmacher to Lex Luthor, to Heyman's Luthor in the Superman movies. I don't know, that might be too an arcane a reference for you.
Yeah.
sorry. Yeah, okay, I can see that. But that would drive it far more into comedy, I think.
Well, okay, but you're talking about Billy Kay, bro.
Yeah, like, I know.
Billy is aces at comedy stuff, yes. And she's, you know, generously mid in the ring.
Because heel comedy is great, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, wacky heel comedy is sometimes cringe. So it's one of those things where I wasn't sure. But okay, anything else from you from this week?
No, Damian Priest really settling into his own as a member of the Judgment Day too. I think this is really kind of helping him out.
I really like his confidence.
I do too.
I do. There's a certain smugness about him that comes through on the TV. That's really confidence, but he's portraying it as smugness at the same time. And when he speaks, I mean, look, he has a cool ass voice. So it's one of those things where he talks, where he does that in the again, kids, straight to the camera promo. I can't think of the word right now, but you believe it.
Yes, credibility.
Credibility, thank you.
Yep, that's what I got for this week here, Hawkins.
That's cool. We'll end it there. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. It's been a long week. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Network. Any kind of show or any kind of wrestling you like, we probably have a show for it, including Joshi, including Open the Voice Gate, including trivia, including shows on theme songs, and including the new AEW show, The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. Also, I believe Days of Thunder is on our podcast as well, not just the Patreons, and I've been enjoying some of them as well. I'm not as big of a Thunder fan as a lot of other people were back in the day, because I just viewed it as a B show, but it is a
I viewed it as a B show too, but I have definitely come to appreciate that, especially in the first hour of Thunder. And I do remember this back in my viewing days. There usually was some sneaky, interesting matches in that first hour before they settled into the, you know, plot second hour.
My plug outside of the Voices of Wrestling Network, I am also part of Fight Game Media, much to the disdain of the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But you can follow us at patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. You'll get my premium show, along with a lot of other shows about a lot of other different stateside wrestling for the most part. But I do the Dynamite show with one Paul Fontaine, who is live at SmackDown tonight, giving hot takes on Dynamite and a more thorough deconstruction of the show than you do on than we do here on the Lazy River, per se. But Chris also has a Patreon that he'd like you to support.
Yeah, don't worry about the government has a Patreon that you can find over at patreon.com/DWATG. A buck a show is all I ask. I'm putting out like one show a month. So like literally, if you want to support my show for $1 a month, that would be cool. Are you enjoying this? Well, think about it. Go to patreon.com/DWATG.
Do you want an answer from me?
No, well, Hawkins, you endure this every week and then plead for me to come back the next week. It's weird. It's like, oh, that's horrible. Will you be back next week? It's a strange setup we have. But if you want to support my works on air, patreon.com/DWATG. It gives me a buck a show every time I put out Don't Worry, which just once a month. So $1 if y'all like what I do here.